All right. A woman proudly told her friend, "I'm responsible for making my husband a millionaire." "Well, what was he before he married you?" "A billionaire." You all caught that? Okay. Some people have the gift of gaining wealth, and other people seem to have the gift of spending it. Which does Jesus recommend? Let's take a look today in Luke 16, and we'll be following up the parable that we looked at this last time we were together. I apologize to those of you who may have missed that, that we can't review the entire thing, but I'll try to give a quick rundown. The parable begins in Luke 16, verse 1. Jesus tells a story about a man who was the manager of a rich man's estate, a rich man's goods. And he was accused of wasting the man's money. He was called in and fired and told to give an account of his stewardship. Well, realizing that he was going to be out of a job and therefore out of resources, he quickly called in some of his master's debtors, people who owed money to his master, and wrote off a portion of their debts. Now, you follow what's going on here? It's not his money. They don't owe him. They owe his master. But he's discounting their debts. And he says his reasoning behind this is, these people are going to welcome me into their houses when I'm out of a job. Because I was nice to them by discounting their debts. And the weirdest part about this story is, now, would you like it if somebody did that with your debts, if your accountant wrote off debts that other people owed you? Come on, be honest. How many would like that? I don't see a single hand. All right? So, this man is dishonest, isn't he? That's not an honest thing to do when you're managing someone else's money. However, when his master found out about it, we see here at the end of the story, verse 8, it says, the master commended his dishonest steward. Now, he had no illusions about him. He knew he was dishonest. But it says he commended his dishonest steward because he had acted shrewdly. He had acted shrewdly. He was wise. And Jesus, interestingly enough, goes on to say in verse 9, I tell you, and he's talking to his disciples here, use unrighteous mammon is the old King James. Use worldly wealth. Use money to gain friends for yourselves so that when it's gone, when you run out of money, they will welcome you into eternal dwellings. Jesus actually says, you should emulate this dishonest guy. He got something right when he was planning ahead for the future by being dishonest with someone else's money. Now, I realize that seems a little bit odd for Jesus to recommend dishonesty. And it's not that he's recommending the dishonesty itself. But he's saying, even if you were only motivated by selfishness, it would be smart for you to plan ahead for the future with the resources you have at your disposal now. Now, does that make sense? Those of us who expect to have a future beyond death, would it not be wise for us to plan ahead for that future now while we're alive? Absolutely it would. And so Jesus is saying, like this dishonest guy who knew how to use the resources at his disposal to plan for his future, as he could look ahead and see that his future was going to be different than the present, so it would be wise for you as Christians, as my followers, to plan ahead for your future using the resources you have at your disposal now. All right. The weird part about it is that Jesus uses what we might call a negative example for us to emulate. It's not often that Jesus says, be like this dishonest guy. Be like this criminal. How many of you want your children to grow up and be like a criminal that you know? No hands. So this is a very strange story, and it's bothered me a lot of the time and bothered a lot of people. And rightly so, I suppose. So I want to look at just one more phrase, and it's in verse 8, and a little bit of the section following this story, which still challenges me. Now, Jesus says in verse 8, I'm reading the second half of the verse, "The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light." So what two groups of people does Jesus compare there in verse 8? You can talk to me, by the way. All right, the people of the world, or the sons of this age, is a pretty literal translation for that. The sons of this age and the sons of light. Who are those groups of people? I mean, what does sons of this age mean, and what does sons of the light mean?
The sons of the light are the ones that are followers of God, and all the rest of the people run into the category.
All right, the sons of the light, Betty Lou says, would be the followers of God, and the rest would fall into the other category, people who are not followers of God. Anyone else? Different words? All right, the sons of this age are the people who are not planning to be part of the next age. Are you following me? You realize this age, this world as we know it, will come to an end.
Yeah.
And everything that we own and possess and manage as stewards in this age is going to be taken away from us. Some of us are planning to have a life beyond this age. But there are a lot of people in this world who say, the famous words, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Right? They're not planning to live beyond this age. So they're the sons of this age. What are they motivated by? Greed, selfishness, right? Because I might as well get the most out of this life while I've got it. Versus the sons of light. What are or should they be motivated by?
Receiving more light.
Okay, receiving more light. That's a good way of putting it. Just in contrast to the selfish motivation of the sons of this age. Yeah, they're looking for a life to come, but they should be, in contrast to selfishness, motivated by
love and giving.
Yeah, unselfishness. This is the contrast, right? Now, when Jesus compares these two groups, he says the sons of this age are more shrewd than who?
The sons of what?
Who is Jesus commending again? Who is he admiring in that statement? Isn't that interesting? Jesus again is noticing that the sons of this world, the sons of this age, the people who are not planning to live forever, are smarter or are getting something better even than the sons of light. The people who should be motivated by unselfishness, who are planning to live forever in heaven with God. What is it that Jesus admires about them? What characteristic? Yeah, their shrewdness, or their wisdom, their savvy, we might say. And it's their savviness in relationship to whom? Right, to, it says, to the others of their kind, or to the other sons of this world. We might summarize it this way. The people of this world, the sons of this age, are smarter at being selfish than the sons of the light are at being unselfish. Did you follow that? The people of this world know better how to deal with each other than the people who are planning for another world know how to deal with each other. Well, why is that? What is it that the sons of this age get that the sons of the light don't seem to grasp, according to Jesus? Now, this is somewhat heavily based on the story that we just kind of quickly summarized. So you kind of have to go back there. What is it that the sons of this age seem to get, which the sons of the light don't quite grasp. Right, the sons of this age seem to have a better grasp, even though the future they're planning for is still within this age. They seem to have a better grasp of how to use their present resources to plan ahead for the future. And specifically, what did this guy plan to do? He had money at his disposal, but what did he do to plan for the future with that money? He knew he couldn't keep the money, so what did he do with it? Yeah, he canceled debts. Really, what was he hoping he would still have when the money was gone? Friends. He understood, even though it was only for this life, that relationships are more valuable than stuff. He understood that relationships are more valuable than stuff. So by contrast, what can we assume about the sons of the light, on the other hand? If they're not getting that, what do they think? Perhaps they're not interested in using people. Perhaps. Think about that. We have to recognize Jesus is using sort of a negative example. You can't really buy friends. Not real friends. But he says, in the same way, you ought to use your earthly resources to make friends for eternity. So apparently it is possible to use earthly resources to make true friends that you will see in eternity. And Jesus is recommending that. He's not. Am I wrong? Verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. So it is possible, and he's making a contrast here. He's saying, even if you were only motivated by selfish things, it would be smart for you not to arrive at heaven's gate with your pockets full of money. Right? Because you can't buy your entrance there with money.
But those friends who you have helped.
But the people that you have blessed, the relationships that you have made are going to matter at that point where money will not. So Jesus does recommend that. So what can we assume that the people of the light, at least the ones he's talking to, he's trying to convince them, what are they not getting?
The value of other people, maybe?
The value of other people, right? The value of relationships over possessions. Now, if we read a little further on down the line, it says, the Pharisees who loved money heard all this and they were sneering at Jesus. Now, were the Pharisees planning to be in heaven?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were planning on it. They considered themselves sons of the light. But they didn't seem to grasp what Jesus was saying. They thought that money was very important. And that, in fact, having lots of it was a sign that God liked you and was blessing you. And so, indeed, there are people here who consider themselves sons of the light who don't seem to understand that relationships matter more than stuff. In fact, they're getting on Jesus' case, if we go back a little bit further in the context, because Jesus is hanging out with sinners, wasting his time and his life on these wicked, evil people. And they can't understand why Jesus wants a relationship with those kind of people. And Jesus says relationships matter so much more than what you want. All you want is money. And the reason why you don't want to hang around with the poor people and the sinners is because it might affect your pocketbook. Right, so he's talking to people who are planning to be in heaven, but who are, instead of making friends with the resources they have, they are hoarding up those resources as if they could keep them forever. Now, again, you recognize the stuff that you own now, you will not be able to keep forever.
Because at death, you are...
That's right.
You don't have anything left.
That's right. At death, it will all be taken away from you. And should you live through the final end of this world, right, there will be people alive when Jesus comes back to this earth. And they will never die. But guess what's going to happen to their property?
It's all gone.
Boom. It's going to go up in smoke. Right? Just like the rest of our, if we die before then, it's going to rust or someone else will take it or whatever. It doesn't matter whether you die first or whether you remain alive and go to heaven. All your stuff is going to be taken from you at some point. You cannot keep it forever. But some of the religious people who were planning on heaven were hoarding up their stuff as if they could. They believe that he who dies with the most toys wins. And Jesus says, what good is that money going to do you when you're dead or when the Lord comes? You could have used it to make friends for eternity instead of hoarding it up and having it be just wasted. So, if we were more shrewd, we who consider ourselves sons of the light, we would recognize that everything we have is ours only as stewards. It isn't ours to begin with. We've received it from someone else. That our stewardship will not go on forever. We can't keep the stuff forever anyway. And that we are being tested now by how we handle those things that we cannot keep. Did you recognize that? We are being tested now by how we handle somebody else's stuff. Jesus says, use it to your eternal advantage by investing it in grace-filled relationships. In fact, he says it this way. I tell you, use unrighteous mammon. Now, again, that's the King James version of it. And I want to focus in on that because I want to understand. Ken was bothered by this last time when we looked at it. If unrighteous mammon, mammon is a word for wealth, for hoarded money, right? And unrighteous, it's the same word that the master says, he commended the unrighteous steward, unjust. It's the word, justice is the word, we have a kind of a concept in English. When there's justice, things are kind of equal, right? There's an equality of penalty or benefit when there is justice. And this guy was an unjust steward because he wasn't fair, right? Other people owed his master, and he benefited those other people at the expense of his master, right? So he gets called an unjust steward. But Jesus says, I tell you the truth, use unjust wealth to gain friends for yourselves. And that's always bothered me. We have kind of an idea that money is dirty, right? We, of course, we want lots of it around, but we have kind of this filthy lucre, all right, as an expression, that somehow money is a little bit tainted. And Ken was asking last time, well, how can you bless somebody with something that's tainted? And so I went down, I was looking at this again. What does he mean calling it unrighteous wealth? What is unrighteous about this wealth? And specifically, remember, it's the wealth that he says you're supposed to use to make friends for eternity. So before anybody answers me, I'd like you to huddle together, get together with the people near you, because this is going to take a little bit of concentration. And I want you to look at the story, look at the context here, and tell me what is unjust, what is unrighteous about this money. So go ahead and take a moment or two and ponder that question. What is unrighteous or unjust about this money? And yes, you really can't talk with each other. Go ahead. Had anybody got some ideas yet? Yes? No? Nobody responded. All right, so that means you need more time? No, it doesn't mean you need more time. You just don't have any ideas, but you don't need more.
Well, she had some good ideas.
this is the body at work.
It's like if you're working for a company.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they might be giving their money unjustly.
They might, yeah.
It's illegal.
Yeah.
And yet you're using that money. You can use it to help others.
Like when they used to go in gathering and they'd hit up the brewery in town?
Yeah.
the church has never been afraid to take money from people who would give it to them, even if we would not approve of the way it came. Now, if you're a church member and you're running a brewery, that's a little bit of a different situation, but we'd be happy to take the money.
But suppose you had the company car. Now, how are you going to use the company car? Are you going to use it for the company to help somebody or just for yourself?
All right. Well, that's a good question. Right, so unjust, the wealth of unrighteousness would be a literal translation over that. Unjust money, one possibility is it could be unrighteous money by the way that it's gained. All right, did you guys have any more to add to that? In this context, of course, what I'm wrestling with, it's a little bit beyond that, is how in the world are, well, I guess you answered that. Christians are to use unjust money to bless others, right? So does that mean I need to go out of my way to find the money that the brewery has to bless others? Well, all right. Just I'm getting some of it anyway. Did you want to add to that? All right. And a lot of it, it's very interesting. A lot of people justify their behavior by saying, well, it's illegal, but I'm being nice to somebody. You know, or, you know, God forbids doing this, but I'm helping somebody, so that makes it okay. Is that what he's getting at here? To be dishonest, you know, essentially steal from your employer, but send it to Africa, where the people are in need. Well, that's something to consider. Well, Ken, were you going to add?
Well, the riches of Jericho were God's.
Yeah.
They were told, don't touch it, it's God's, leave it alone. Paul pointed out that things offered to idols aren't just things offered to a rock. And, you know, they'd offer money, they'd offer different things that's kind of a tangent, but so that the money was not tainted per se by the idol, because it's still money, it's just an intangible something.
Right, so what you're saying is, how could money be unrighteous? What would taint it that would make it, right? And maybe that's not what it means here. Maybe tainted money is not what Jesus is getting at when he says, use unrighteous mammon, unrighteous mammon to make friends for eternity. Maybe it doesn't mean tainted. Maybe we've assumed that.
The $20 that I have could be put in the offering, or it could be spent on a beer at the bar. The money is not unrighteous in the bar and righteous in the plate.
Some people would dispute that, but I understand what you're saying, and I think you're right. So in what sense, then, is Jesus advocating the use of unrighteous money? If the money itself is not tainted, why does he call it unrighteous wealth? Anyone have more to add? Debbie, you look like you were about to speak back there. You don't have to, but
I was just telling Bill, I said, you know, sit there and think about it. It's a lot easier giving money when it's not yours. I mean, you know,
well, that's very interesting.
Idea that, you know, when somebody else, you can use it to help other people. It seems like it's easier to use them.
Well, that's a powerful insight. Because Christians then ought to have the easiest time using money to help others, because we recognize what?
It's not ours in the beginning.
That nothing that we have is ours.
You know, we're
He's allowed us to use it, but it's not our. And where we get into trouble when we want to keep it and hoard it is because we think it's ours.
But God knows those people's carts who they give it to, too.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. So, I don't know. We've got some interesting possibilities here, but no real clear insight of what Jesus for what Jesus means when he says use unrighteous money. Anyone have more to add?
Would that be behind where the ancient Pharisees always had to have a pretty big pot of gold put down there, so when they come back to their second life, they'll have all their money?
I don't know. There were some people that, like the ancient pharaohs, or is that what you're thinking of? That thought they could take the money to the other side by being buried with it. You know where all that money is today? Museums. Has been dug up. People have robbed their graves. They didn't get to take it with them. Even though they thought they could, they didn't get to take it with them. What is unrighteous or unjust about using money that is not yours to make friends for eternity?
Make sure you don't get caught.
Well, it does seem that way a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, are you hearing that? On earth, if I took my employer's money and gave it away, I would try to make sure I didn't get caught. But what if my employer says, use unequal balances to make friends for eternity with my stuff? Are you following that yet? This is God who owns everything, who is telling us to use unrighteous money. You know why we have money in the first place? Anybody ever thought about it? Why do we have money? Do they have money in heaven?
You trade the value of your time.
Yeah. We all know that we're going to live X amount of time, right? And if I'm going to do work for you to give you something that you need, I don't want to just be out that time. Because my life essentially gets shorter and shorter. So I want you to give me back some of your life. Well, what if there's nothing that you can do for me that I need? So we've created this common currency so that you can take some of the life energy that you've invested in your work, turn it into cash that I can then take and get back my life. Isn't that essentially what we're doing? We're trading work. We're trading energy. We're trading our own lives back and forth. And the whole reason why we do that is because I know I've only got so much. And then it's going to be gone. In heaven, I don't think they have money. You know why? If you need a house built, we all get together and have a barn raising, whatever. We don't care if you ever pay us back.
And if it takes a month, what's a month to eternity?
Because I'm going to live, I'm out some of my time, but what do I care? I've got plenty. So they don't need money. But we've got to have money to keep things just. To keep things equal in this life. Do we not? Well, it's the same thing as bartering. It's the same thing as bartering. It just allows us to do it easier, more easily. But the reason why we barter is the same thing. I don't want to spend my life on you. Use up my whole life for your benefit and I don't get anything out of it. We've got to keep it equal. We've got to keep it equal. Just. Jesus says, use unjust money to make friends for yourselves for eternity. What does he mean? Meaning it doesn't matter. Money that doesn't matter. Well, what money is there that doesn't matter? That's a very good answer. She said, use money that doesn't matter. What money is there that doesn't matter?
Well,
this is very good. She said, the money you don't need to keep yourself afloat. Maybe we could say the money that you don't own and can't keep anyway.
Neighbor that lives 250 miles down the road.
Sorry, you lost me.
Money that isn't yours.
The money that belongs to the neighbor 250 miles. Right. At, when Corinne and I were at seminary, we visited frequently a local botanical gardens. And one day they had a drawing for a new washer and dryer. And it didn't cost anything, so we put our names on a card and threw it in. Never thought about it. I mean, we've never won anything in our lives. We won it. Blew our minds. And we're thinking, wow, but we already had a washer and a dryer. We didn't need it to keep ourselves afloat. About the same time, a friend of ours was desperate for money to get through school. I don't tell him this. I think I've told this story before. But we were convicted that this was extra. We didn't need it. We could sell it, turn it into money, and pass it on to our friend who was desperate. And it wouldn't hurt us any, because we hadn't had it 10 minutes before, and here we had it, and oh, but we sure could use the money. And we went back and forth and couldn't figure out, how do we decide if God wants us to do this or not? You know, and you pray and ask for lightning bolts from heaven, and God never sent any lightning bolts from heaven. So we finally decided, well, it's not going to hurt us any. It's in harmony with His character. The only way we'll ever know if we were supposed to do it is to do it. And so it was really neat. Actually, God worked it out in such a way that we were able to donate the money to someone who hired him. And he never had any idea what happened. You know, that the job was created because God gave us the money in a drawing. And he was able to get through another quarter of school. We didn't need it. How much of the money that you have in your possession do you really not need to keep yourself afloat? That's a very interesting question. Yes. Yes. Before we don't, that's like my dad filled his garage with so many things because he was afraid if he threw it away, he'd need it. So many things that he couldn't find it anymore and had to go out and buy it again anyway. That's right. Use unequal money to make friends for yourselves for eternity. Who is the best example of inequality in wealth? God Himself. Isn't He? He does not work in our system that when He gives something away, He demands a certain thing back. God gives and gives and gives and keeps on giving. And so He says, be like me. Use unequal wealth. Don't demand it back. Don't expect full payment for everything you do for anybody in your life. And in doing that, you express love. You build relationships. You invest in things that matter more than whether you get paid back equally. Life for life. For everything you, that's what's unrighteous about the mammon.
You don't get
justice. When God forgives us, He never gets paid back what was owed Him. That's unjust. It's unequal. We're benefiting at His expense. But He's just fine with that. He's glad to do it. And He says, just like I've won your friendship through the inequality of my giving to you, make friends for yourselves for eternity by not demanding equality in everything you do. That's what unrighteous mammon is. And that explains this next little bit. But by the way, I was curious, is this heresy, you know, to call God unjust? I mean, isn't that what I'm saying? God is unjust.
There's
yes.
A better term than unjust. He's unfair towards himself.
himself when he deals with us.
We usually say generous
yeah.
or gracious. Mm-hmm. Even though, literally, it is unequal. It is unjust for God. But you're right. But I read Zechariah 7:9. It says, practice true justice. Show compassion and mercy to each other. In other words, true justice rightly understood is not about just equality. It's about relationships first. And that justice properly understood includes mercy and compassion. So, no, we're not saying God is inherently unjust and unfair. But he certainly stacks things in our favor because he cares about relationship more than just getting his stuff back. All right, let's take a look at verse 10. Verse 10 really confused me when I got this insight because essentially Jesus is recommending injustice, right? He's saying, be like the unjust steward, give away and don't expect back. Give away my stuff and don't demand it back. It's not yours anyway. And you have my full permission to be generous with my things. But then he says this, whoever is faithful in little will also be what? Faithful with much. And whoever is, literally it says unjust, it's the same word, with little will also be unjust with
much.
Now I thought he was recommending injustice. Now it seems like he's contrasting faithfulness and injustice. Because he goes on and says, if you've not been faithful in handling worldly wealth, unrighteous mammon, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, right, you're a steward, remember? Who will give you your own? Didn't we just say that Jesus wants us to be unjust? Not to demand payment, but to freely give as we've freely received? Why does he now contrast faithfulness and unrighteousness? Shall I make you squirm or not? That's a trick question. Let me just, that part isn't, but I just asked you a trick question. When I read this, he says, whoever's faithful in little will also be faithful in much. Whoever's unjust in little will also be unjust in much. I assumed that he's contrasting what two things? And you probably did too. No, he's contrasting what two characteristics?
Selfishness.
Give me the words in the text. Faithfulness and injustice or unjustness, right? He says, it comes across like this. If you've been faithful in a little, we trust you with lots. If you haven't been trustworthy with a little, we aren't going to trust you with anything more. But is it a contrast? He actually says what they have in common. Did you notice? What do faithfulness and injustice have in common? According to that little comparison that he makes.
People are consistent.
People are consistent. Your behavior with a little bit predicts what? Your behavior with a lot. Then they're the same. If you're faithful with a little bit, you'll be faithful. If you're unjust with a little bit, you'll be unjust with a lot. So what does it mean to be faithful with unjust money? It means, did you hear that? Say it again.
You will always be a giver.
It means you will always be a giver. It means you'll consistently be generous. It means you'll consistently give others the benefit at your expense. And it's not really your expense, it's God's expense, because you don't own it anyway. And so it's not a contrast. He's not saying be faithful rather than be unjust. He's saying, if you're faithful with unjust money that isn't yours, then I can trust that you'll be faithful with unjust money, generosity, even when it is yours. If you're generous, generously unequal with worldly wealth, then I can trust you to be generously unequal with true wealth, with heavenly wealth. You recognize, if you and I are selfish and greedy in this life, making us immortal is not going to cure that. Are you with me? Jesus says, if God's love for you and His generosity toward you has not changed your attitude now, so that you're willing to give away stuff you can't even keep, making you live forever is not going to suddenly make it easier for you to be generous. And now is the test time. We are being tested now with what we do with God's stuff. Because if I can't even be generous and give away stuff that I can't keep, I mean, I can't keep it forever. Why not get rid of it? Why not give it away? Why would someone give me something that I can keep? Is it going to be easier to be unselfish with that? Would it? I mean, I can hoard up all kinds of money now, but I'm going to die and it's going to be taken from me anyway. If I can't even see through the logic of that, well, duh, it'd be smarter to pass it on. Then how would giving me money that I can keep forever make it easier for me to be unselfish? It's only going to make it harder for me to be unselfish. Here's the good news in all this. God didn't even have to give us a trial run. Everything we have is a gift from God. Everything. Now our forefathers, Adam and Eve in the garden, took everything that God had given them and blew it. And God told them at that time, in the day that you eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will surely die. How many of us would be here if that had happened? None of us. So the fact that you're here and breathing is because God has dealt unequally with you and with me. The fact that we even have an opportunity to be tested to see how we're going to use His stuff is grace. God didn't owe us this. It's unequal, it's unjust of Him to even give us the opportunity to love and be loved. He's already been unjust in our favor by letting us be the stewards of His stuff even for a little while. So what about this last phrase? No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon is the old word wealth, riches. Now, I can see how that if I love money, I'll hate God. Does that make sense to you? I mean, if I love wealth, I can see how I'm going to push God out of my life because He's going to have some words to say about my love of money. But a lot of us would like to say, I love God, and I'd sure like to have a little bit of money around. Right? How many of us would like to say, well, if I'm going to love God, I have to hate money? Will I really despise wealth and hate it if I love God? She said there have been people like that, but they're kind of odd. Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. Let me illustrate it this way. God loves to give. Doesn't He? I mean, if He... If he begins to have too much resources in his house, and they begin to kind of pool up around his feet, he gets nervous. And he says, who can I share this stuff with? God created entire worlds and planets and beings, not because he was lonely, but because he had too much love and he wanted to share it. And he had to create people to share it with because he had too much. God hates stagnation. Over in Surprise Valley, we've got lakes with no outlet. Water flows in, and it never leaves. God's intention is that his blessings will flow into your life and continue to flow out, and to be a blessing to someone else, another place, and another time, to continue flowing. Wealth, right? Wealth, as it's used here, is when there's no outlet. The resources come in, and I say, oh, I might need this later. Oh, I can't let someone else have... And they begin to puddle up and pool up in one place. What happens to a lake that does that? Well, in this case, they're dry lakes. Not every lake, though, becomes dry that has no outlet. Yeah. Eventually, the concentration of impurities becomes so high that all life is wiped out. That's why God hates wealth. Do you understand what I'm saying? He doesn't hate money. Money is neutral. It's just a way of passing life force around. But he hates stagnation because it leads to what? I thought I heard it.
Death.
It leads when someone becomes self-centered and all these blessings come in and I keep every last one of them for me. That is the source of all heartache and pain and death in God's universe. And hold on just a second. Yeah. And God hates that. So God hates wealth. Right? I'm not saying that anybody out there who has a large pool of resources under their control is evil or bad. The question is it stagnant or is it continuing to flow? God has no problem with massive lakes, right? Wonderful, beautiful sources of rich biodiversity. A lot of life there. As long as there's an outlet. But God hates wealth when it comes to one place and stops there. And if I care about what God cares about, and I love God, I will also hate stagnation and wealth in that sense. Because I see the damage that it does to myself and to other people. You can't serve two masters. You can't love God's way of unselfishness, of passing on the blessing, and selfishness, keeping it all for me at the same time. Either you will love the one and say, wow, I got all these blessings. Who can I share them with? In which case you will hate the other. Or you will love the other and hate the first. You can't have it both ways. How would you like to respond to God's generosity and unjustness toward you?
I've read about a man. He's now gone, but at the age of 60, everybody told him he was going to die. So he started giving away his money. And he gave, and he gave. And the money started to come.
And he couldn't get rid of it all.
Couldn't get rid of it all, and it's still after you. Doggy Rockefeller Sr. started at the age of 60 giving his money away. He was the first billionaire in this country. And they could say Bill Gates has got more, but his money was...
In terms of inflation, maybe not.
Nothing, but he gave. And he lived to be 98 years old.
And still hadn't gotten rid of it all.
And his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren still spending that money. Standard Oil is a multi-billion dollar concern. And he started this.
So how do you want to respond to God's generous unjustness toward you?
Be unjust to others.
Yeah. You're getting it. Pass it on. I wish that I had candy. I used this as an illustration when I was teaching in school once. Tossed out a piece of candy into the room and waited. Kid caught it. Said, you don't get it. So I tossed another piece of candy out to another kid in the room and waited. You don't get it. Tossed another piece of candy out to another kid in the room. And as soon as he handed it to someone else, I tossed him another one. As soon as he had, I was throwing it at him as fast as I could throw it, and he was throwing it all over the room to keep the flow going. Now, the first kid, he had one piece of candy. That was good. It came, it arrived in his hand. He ate it, it was gone. The next kid, it never stopped. I mean, the final kid, it never stopped. How many pieces did he handle? Now, I don't know how many of that he eventually ate, but, the room was saturated by the time he was done. And he probably could have eaten 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. Because he didn't just let it stop with him.
You know, mentioning Bill Gates, they give an awful lot of money to charities here and there.
Yeah, in fact, Bill Gates has quit working for Microsoft to spend full-time job is to figure out how to get rid of the money. Okay. I'm serious. I mean, he runs the foundation now. That's all he does. Is try to manage that to benefit the most people. And that's a good thing. It's in harmony with the principle of God's kingdom to figure out, how can I get rid of this? I don't need it to live on. Right? It's beyond what I need. Who can I share it with? How many of you would like to make God a millionaire? Do you understand the joke? He used to be a billionaire. How many of you would like to spread... God would like nothing better than for you to reduce his surplus by sharing it with someone else. And that goes from money to your time to, dare I even say, forgiveness. God doesn't need you to hold someone else responsible for keeping things equal. Because he hasn't been equal with you. And he wants you to let those other people who have hurt you off the hook. Will it cost you something to forgive? Yes, it will. But guess what? Everything you have is God's anyway. And he can supply more when you give it away. Ken?
God has already forgiven everything and paid the price for everything unequally.
Yes.
It's our turn to forgive the minuscule thing that was done against us when God has already forgiven it.
Out of a vast pool of resources, we have the wealth to forgive and to not demand repayment when someone has wronged us. Yes. Amen.